As many of you here probably know, the Southern Alberta Council meets every Thursday from 12 o'clock to 1:30 at Sven Eriksson's restaurant, and anyone is welcome to come to those meetings. They are usually advertised in the newspaper, always on the Southern Alberta Council on Public Affairs website, and also on the University of Lethbridge notice board. So do come out, and you will experience a variety of issues that pertain to us here in Southern Alberta and to us as citizens around the world. If you're unable to attend those meetings, they are also broadcast on Shaw, and they're also live audio streamed on the Southern Alberta Council on Public Affairs website. This evening, we're very pleased to have a number of media people here. Of course, we are particularly happy that the Lethbridge Public Library is supporting us in having this forum. Also, Shaw Cable is here, as usual, and they are filming. I forgot to give you your cue, Bob. Hope everything's okay over there. Bob is a faithful person. He comes and films the Southern Alberta Council meetings many times. This particular forum will be broadcast on Shaw at 3 o'clock this Saturday afternoon. So if you want to listen a little bit more closely to what your candidates have said, you can do that at 3 o'clock on Saturday afternoon. That's on Channel 12, Shaw Cable. And let your friends know as well. We're also pleased to welcome Global, CFCN, CBC, and the Lethbridge Herald, and perhaps there are other media people here as well. Now, Southern Alberta Council on Public Affairs prides itself on running a forum system that is affordable for everyone, but we do that on a shoestring. And so it's very important that the public support us in whatever way you can. And if you're able to, we have Susan Giffen over here, and she has a basket, and your donations are most welcome. Remember, paper doesn't make as much noise as coin. And now let's proceed with our forum. This is what the format for the evening will be. We will first have the candidates give an opening statement of 1 minute each. They are seated in alphabetical order. They have drawn a number which is going to indicate the order in which they will speak. And as I say, they will have 1 minute each for an opening statement. After that, they will have 2 minutes each to answer some pre-prepared questions from the Southern Alberta Council on Public Affairs. Each one of them will draw a question. That question will be read to them, and they'll have 2 minutes to respond to it. And following that, they will each have 5 minutes in which to engage in discussion and debate with the other candidates. So each one of the candidates will be given the opportunity to ask questions of the other candidates and engage in some discussion. We'll then follow that with a break, a very brief break, about 10 minutes, and then we'll have about 40 minutes for audience question and answer, including a few that we've received via email. And finally, we will give each candidate in reverse order to their opening statements an opportunity to give a 1 minute closing statement. So that's the format for the evening. Trevor Page, who is on the Southern Alberta Council on Public Affairs executive board, he is going to assist me in timekeeping, and we will be trying to keep very close to this schedule because we want to be out of here by 9 o'clock. So we will begin with Howard Forsyth, who drew number one. Howard?
1 minute scares me because I blew 5 minutes last night in COVID. I have a 5 minute speech. What will I say in 1 minute? First of all, I'm running as an independent, no parties. That's both good and bad. I won't get into committees. I won't be on the floor very much. But I will be representing you because I can do that without anybody telling me back in a room what the vote should be. I can wait till the final minute on votes when all the facts are in. Not old blue
Howard, can you use the microphone, please?
Yes.
Can you hear me?
Yes. Thank you.
Secondly, I'm if they can hear me,
are you counting that time?
No, we won't count that time. Okay, hold it close to your mouth.
This is a very different audience than Coaldale. Coaldale was largely 50 and above. This is a mixed all the way through. It's wonderful. I've complained, I was on the front page of Calgary Herald today saying that we used to grow up in the 1920s, I remember it that far, at 19 and 20, and we're not adolescents anymore, we're adults. Now, your adolescents, especially males, very often until 30. A totally different world. I've seen one of the most dramatic changes in the history of the human race. In my lifetime, I remember a lot of it. I can see much further behind, and I think I look further ahead. I'll tell you more about that later. 1 minute's not that much
time. Excellent. Thank you, Howard. Michael Cormacan of the Liberal Party. I should have introduced people to Howard Forsyth, of course, is running as an independent. Michael Cormacan for the Liberal Party of Canada.
Hello.
Just use Howard for now.
Just work.
Good evening, everybody. Thank you for coming out this evening, and thank you, Luella. I believe strongly in serving my community. Our community needs a strong spokesperson in Parliament advocating for your issues. A new approach is needed locally. One complaint I heard going door to door is that we are not represented. By working together as a community, we can more effectively create solutions and address challenges. Having worked in the public health sector for 35 years, I am passionate about retaining and maintaining and improving our healthcare system. Farmers need access to markets, international advocacy, strategies beyond emergency funding. As a parent of four adult children, I understand the values and challenges of post-secondary education. I support increased financial support for students, enhancing apprenticeship programs, and expanding training. I will work with First Nations.
Next is Melanie Thomas, representing the New Democratic Party.
Okay, first of all, is this microphone working? Excellent. All right, well, my name is Melanie Thomas, and I ran for the NDP in 2004 for the last federal election, and I'm here again for the NDP in this particular election. And I'd like to say, while others played games in the last parliament, it was the first minority parliament we've had in quite some time, the NDP actually sat down, rolled up their sleeves, and got work done for you, for people like you. What did we get? We got investments in post-secondary education with money directly related to tuition relief for students. We got investment in workers, in affordable housing, in the environment, in foreign aid, and in Canada's First Nations. What will the NDP offer you during this election? We offer a positive choice, a choice for positive change. We'll take care of our seniors. You built this country, and we owe you our respect, and you really deserve it from us. We'll invest in education and training. We'll improve public health care, and we will stop privatization in its tracks. The NDP founded Medicare, and we are the ones who will protect it.
Next, we have Mark Slingerland from the Christian Heritage Party.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. I hope you'll forgive me if I succumb to a little bit of a cliche, but what I have for you tonight is good news and bad news. We'll start with the bad news. Canada, on its current track, is headed for catastrophe. Our infrastructure is crumbling. Our agriculture policies are not sustainable. Our environment has been risked for economic growth. Our democracy is in tatters. And perhaps worst, the stable family, the building block and most important part of society, has been undermined by the very institutions that should be protecting it. The good news is the Christian Heritage Party is here to represent you to reverse those negative trends. We have a strong infrastructure program. We have a focus on the family as the basis of civilization. We're the only party with the moral principles to return true responsibility to government. Thank you.
Andrea Sheridan, representing the Green Party.
In the 2004 federal election, the Green Party changed the face of Canadian politics. For the first time, Canadians were introduced to the Greens' way of doing politics. Defying expectations, we fielded a full slate of 308 candidates and made certain that every Canadian had the opportunity to cast a vote for social programs, environmental sustainability, and government accountability. Sadly, however, 583,000 Green voters did not put one MP into Parliament, while 500,000 Liberal voters put 22 MPs in Atlantic Canada. This is not democracy. The Liberals promised proportional representation 12 years ago. We can have a Canada that allows each and every vote to count, just as we can have a Canada that protects our environment while developing strong, sustainable economy. We can move beyond Kyoto to make ourselves a world leader in combating climate change. We have 308 candidates running in this election as well, just as the last, and we are vividly aware of the need for democratic reform and restoring people's trust in their government. You have nothing to lose and everything to gain by voting for the Green Party.
And Rick Caslin, representing the Conservative Party.
Thank you. Is this working? Well, thank you very much, and congratulations to SACPAW for putting on a good event. Last night we had a good crowd in Coaldale, another good crowd tonight. I think that bodes well for what's coming up in this on Election Day. But ladies and gentlemen, I am Rick Caslin. I've been your member of Parliament since 1997. I've asked for your support three times previously, and I'm back to ask for your support again. We have some priorities in this election. We want to clean up government by passing the Federal Accountability Act. We want to provide real tax relief to working families by cutting the GST. We want to make our streets and communities safer by cracking down on crime. We want to help parents with the cost of raising their children. And we want to work with the provinces to establish a patient wait time guarantee. And ladies and gentlemen, another priority of mine is we have to diversify our agricultural industry. And I think the 5% component of ethanol in our gas and fuels by the year 2010 will help us do that. And I'm excited about that in southern Alberta. With the amount of grain that comes into this part of the world, we have a good opportunity with ethanol. Thank you.
Okay, Trevor Page is going to have each candidate draw a number. We have 12 questions that were prepared, or 11 questions, prepared by Southern Alberta Council on Public Affairs. Each of them will answer one of those questions. Candidates haven't seen the questions, and neither have I. So these questions cover topics including climate change, devolution of power, Aboriginal issues, poverty, Canada-US relations, ethics and civility, taxation, agricultural exports, healthcare, and Canada's position in the world. So, you might want to keep some of those topics in mind too as you're formulating your questions.
Number 12 for Andrea. Number 1 for Mark. Number 4 for Melon. This is to determine the order of speaking. Number 5 for Rick. Number 2 for Michael. Number 3 for Howard. Number 4 for Andrea. Number 6 for Mark. And number 1 for Melon.
Okay, each candidate gets 2 minutes to answer this question, and Melanie is number one with question four. Question four has to do with Aboriginal issues. How would your party reduce the delay in dealing with pressing issues such as water, housing, drug addiction, and education in Aboriginal communities?
Well, thank you for that question. That's a very important question. And is this microphone on? Okay, excellent. The NDP has a 12-point plan for Aboriginal peoples, and I won't get into all 12 points because I only have 2 minutes, but I'll hit the main points that deal with water, housing, drugs, and education. One of the issues that our Aboriginal peoples face is a sense of alienation, I think, from the rest of Canada. The residential school issue has a lot to do with that, and the NDP will seek speedy compensation and a truth and reconciliation process for that. We'll focus on wellness and quality health care and traditional healing in Aboriginal communities. Targeted programs and working with Aboriginal communities and leaders to deal with issues that surround drugs and health needs in their communities, both on reserve and off reserve as well. The NDP budget that we tabled in the spring has provisions for Aboriginal education and training, and for Aboriginal housing as well, and for house for health initiatives. It's interesting to note that on Keshechewan, the reserve there, their water issues hit the news a few weeks ago, and Charlie Angus, who is one of the NDP's MPs who's running for re-election, went there, and the response that we got from the community was overwhelming, and the response that we got from the community was thanking the NDP for caring about the community and for caring about their water needs and for sticking up for them and their children and their future. So Aboriginal communities know that New Democrats are good on our word to Aboriginal peoples, and we will continue with our good work.
Thank you, Melanie. Michael Carmichael, you have question number 7 on ethics and civility. Michael, do you believe that the rough and tumble manner in which business is now conducted in the House of Commons is inevitable? Or are you in favor of a return of civility and to cleaning up the whole process of governance, as recently recommended by veteran NDP politician Ed Broadbent?
Yes, of course. It always bothers me when people act like children, especially when they're adults acting like children. Part of the question is to how to clean it up?
Do you believe that it should be cleaned up, and are you in favor of a return to cleaning it up as recently recommended by NDP politician Ed Broadbent?
Well,
or in what way would you see cleaning it up?
I guess hopefully having a majority government would clean it up, although we've all been told over the years that the best government comes from minority government, where they have to have the support of another party. And we all saw that over the past 17 months, in which I think we got the best legislation you could see, and we have seen for years until the election was called. Hopefully it will be rectified after return to Parliament.
Michael, could you clarify a little bit more about how you would return civility to the Houses of Parliament?
Since I haven't been there, it's my understanding that Speaker is the person with the authority to crack the whip, so to speak, with trying to maintain civility in the House. And I guess government will just have, the Prime Minister would have to just lean on the Speaker to enforce the rules of the House. More.
Thank you. Okay, Howard Forsyth, you have the next question, and this is on health care. Howard, do you support publicly funded and administered health care, which excludes a profit margin for the provider? If not, how can you say that private health care will be cheaper for the patient as profit margins for private clinics and medical insurance companies will be built into the cost?
Oh boy, I love that one. I taught university economics. I found out a long time ago that the cheapest way to give health care is to have one payer. In the United States, for heaven's sake, they have lawyers and hospitals and counties and apparatus by the thousands. All of them have what do they call that? over here. We're doing it cheaper, and look, health care is as elementary for a human society as drink is if you want to stay alive. You better drink just about every day. If anybody is sick, if you're sick, all of your neighbors and all of your friends and all of your family are depreciated in what their performance is. The society, as an economist, the society doesn't want to have a whole category of people. The poorest people would be in the biggest trouble if Klein did what he wanted to do. You don't want those people out of your loop. You must have a healthy and productive society to do anything sensible. I don't know why they argue about health care. We're nearly there. Both parties can be faulted for how they've acted. Chrétien knocked all kinds of money out, and look at what the provinces did. We've got to get health. We've got the format. Let's get it working.
Thank you, Howard. I've had some information that some people at the back can't hear very well, so maybe what I could ask is if the candidates could please stand and make sure you hold the mic quite close to your mouth when you're speaking. Andrea, you have the next question. And that's question 12 on child care. Andrea, two fundamentally different philosophies on the government's role in child care have become evident during the election campaign. One view is a continuing and increased federal government commitment to a national early learning and child care system, including regulated facilities, licensed instructors, and emphasis on learning and development. Another view is keeping the state out of child care and instead paying a child care allowance for all children under 6 years of age so that parents can choose the facility of their preference. What is your party's view on the federal government's role in child care?
Thank you. I'm a little nervous about a state sort of run child care because I'm a school teacher, and I haven't seen them run our schools all that well. So I'm a little nervous about them thinking they're going to be able to run daycares. I think daycare may be a necessity for people in our society, but I'm disappointed about that. I really think we need to return to children under school age being home with one parent. We do have a society today where more people are allowed to work from home with our computer world. So I think that that would be my first and foremost suggestion to my party, is that we really do try to afford one parent stay at home and encourage people to stay at home with their children. Again, being a school teacher, it does make a difference. You can tell the difference between daycare-raised children and home-raised children. It'll only tell you the difference because it just is not true. I'm a little bit concerned that if we're going to have daycares and they are a necessity, that you're darn right. We need to have daycares that are very well run, that to show respect not only for the children but the people running those daycares. I was shocked to find out that you go to 2 years of college, so you're in debt, you know, I don't know, anywhere from $5,000 to $10,000, and you make $9 an hour being a daycare worker. How can you possibly support your family on $9 an hour and you have 2 years of college education, people? Where's the respect for education? Where's the respect for children? I think I'm done.
Thank you, Andrea. Rick Tassin, the next question is for you. Rick, this is on devolution of power. Canada is a federation of provinces and territories with unclear divisions of responsibility in, for example, health care and post-secondary education. The ambiguity arises when funding comes from more than one level of government. What is your position on devolving more power to the provinces? Where should the real power lay, with the federal government or with the provinces and territories?
Thank you. I was hoping to get the question on civility in the House of Commons. Because there's one quick answer. Take those TV cameras out of there and return to normal, believe me. But the devolution of powers and the balance between the federation and or the federal government and the provinces, I think, is one of the key issues we have. We're talking now about a fiscal imbalance, where the federal government is recording huge surpluses, and most of the provinces are struggling to get by. That has to be straightened out, and that's something that we're addressing in this campaign. Get that balance where it should be. Where the federal government intrudes on the constitutional rights of the provinces to deliver certain functions. You mentioned health care. That's one issue that the provinces deliver, but the federal government is involved in. A lot of issues that that we feel that the federal government in the past years, and one of them is the deal for cities, where the federal government was going to deal directly with municipalities. We'd like to see that money get to municipalities, but we'd like to deal with the provinces on a guarantee that that money goes to where it should be. So in order to straighten this out, I think the mechanism is there. The rules are in place. It's just a matter of having a government with the will to do that. The fiscal imbalance, I think, is something that has to be addressed. We talk about equalization payments across the country, but when you see huge surpluses at the federal level, when other provincial governments are struggling to get by, the feds are taking too much money, and they got to get that. Leave that in the provinces so they can do the job that they were constitutionally given the powers to do.
Thank you, Rick. Mark Slingerland, your question is on climate change. And the question is, Mark, do you and your party agree that climate change is real and that concrete steps are needed to address it? If your answer is yes, what concrete steps are you proposing that the federal government implement? Is the Kyoto Accord part of your plan?
Good, thank you. Well, that mic is certainly on. Okay, we'll be a little careful with that one. This is something I looked into a little bit a few years ago when I was teaching Science 10, where climate change comes up. Do we believe that climate change is a problem? Yes, climate change is certainly something we need to deal with. Is it the problem that it's been depicted in the media and by a lot of pundits out there? No. There are certainly steps that need to be taken. The Christian Heritage Party feels that one of the key roles of government is to introduce incentives to bring in green power alternatives. The non-renewable energy sources are clearly running out. We must provide leadership. One of the other questions was possibly on the role of Canada in the world. Well, this is somewhere Canada can make a real difference. We have the existing technology. We have the expertise. We can become world leaders in developing renewable energy sources, and that is something the Christian Heritage Party supports very strongly. The Kyoto Treaty would not be part of our plan. The Kyoto Treaty is a very bad treaty based on reasonably poor science. It does not reduce the amount of pollution or greenhouse gases in the world. It just moves the cost of it from the third world countries, who can pollute to their heart's content, and onto the backs of Canadian taxpayers. We would pay countries like Bangladesh, like India, like China, for their pollution. This does not seem like a good plan either for the world or for Canada, and it is not part of the Christian Heritage Party plan on the environment.
Okay, thank you very much, all of you. The next portion is a section where we wanted to give the candidates an opportunity to discuss among themselves a little bit some of the issues so that we can hear what they have to say about their platforms to and between parties. So once again, Trevor is asking them to draw numbers, so we'll have the order in which they will be able to ask questions of others.
Number three for Mark, and number two for Melanie.
Okay, so again, the procedure here is that in this order, each candidate will be given a 5-minute time period to address a question or more to one or more of the other candidates and for those other candidates to respond. So a total of 5 minutes per candidate. So, Andrea, you get to go first.
green light's on, just go close to your mouth. Yeah.
Hello? My question is for Rick Casson, and it's because he is the only member of Parliament here. And my question is to you as an ordinary citizen, not as a Green Party person necessarily. I'm kind of surprised it hasn't come up because it is one of my pet peeves is taxes. I honestly and truly feel my own self in my own home and carrying out on my daily duties that I am taxed to death. I honestly feel the government has way, way, way too much money. With all this misappropriation of funds, with different parties telling us, the government gave $250 million last year to genetic modification of food. The government spent $2 billion in subsidies for the gastronomy industry. They're making billions of dollars. Why are we giving $2 billion to them? And I could go on for, another 20 hours about all the hidden taxes and all the taxes we pay. Rick, does government have way, way, way too much money? And if they don't, how come at the drop of a hat they can find hundreds of thousands and millions of dollars for silly things?
I think we got one here that works now. Okay. Thank you, Andrea, for that question, because my question is going to be for you later, so you better get ready. But absolutely. We're being taxed to death. June 23rd or June 15th is Tax Freedom Day in this country? No wonder we have both parents having to work outside the home. One works to pay the tax bill, the other one works to feed and house the family. We have a tax plan, of course, in this campaign, and our first plank was to reduce the GST. We want to reduce the GST to 5%, 6% immediately, and then to 5% over over the first mandate of our government, if Canadians so choose. Each point of the GST raises $4.5 billion. You reduce the GST by 2%, you're leaving $9 billion in the pockets of Canadians, all Canadians. 36% of the lowest income Canadians do not pay income tax. A GST cut will help everybody. That's one of the issues. But I think what we saw last spring, we saw a budget in May by the Liberals. We saw a negotiation with the NDP for their support a little while later for $4.8 billion. We had a November update where billions more dollars were found. And then just before the election, more billions of dollars were found. Like, what is going on? We want an independent budgetary office that will work independent of Parliament to report to Parliament, to report to Canadians on what's going on with the budget. The previous budget, the Liberals said there would be a $1.9 billion surplus. It was $9.1 billion. $8 billion spread, and that's a lot of zeros, ladies and gentlemen. So we need to have honesty and accountability in government to start with. We need this budgetary office to keep an eye on how the budgets are progressing through the year. And we need to give tax cuts to Canadians. Start with the GST. We have other parts in our plans for seniors, for students, for families to register children in sports. There's quite a list. I don't have 5 minutes, but I'll give you a chance to rebut that. But certainly, there has to be some sense brought to it. It's just unrealistic to think. And if you just think about it, you work till June, the middle of June every year, just to pay your tax bill at all levels of government. It's incredible.
Andrea, you still have about a minute and a half if you want to direct that question to anyone else or another question.
Maybe I'll just quickly ask you one more question. The Green Party wants to change the gross domestic product to the genuine product indicator, which means we won't just talk about how much money we made, which really isn't accurate. We talk about the gross genuine progress indicator will do things like our mental health, our housing. It takes into all areas of a healthy society. Has your party anything like that?
No, I can't say that I have seen that, but certainly productivity in Canada is an issue. We are being left behind by other countries in the world for our productivity, for the amount of money and amount of effort it takes to produce a product. We are falling behind. And with the changing age that we're going into, with computers and globalization, Canada better be ready to move. And I think we need a government that addresses that productivity issue And you can't be productive if businesses and farmers and fishermen and families are being taxed to death. You need to leave that money with them. It needs to be reinvested in business. It needs to be reinvested in families. So if we can start there, start with some accountability, and let's leave some money in the pockets of hardworking Canadians.
Andrea, any final comment? You have just a few seconds. That's good? Okay. Thank you. All right. Melanie, I believe you were number two. Ah.
Well, it appears as though Andrea is going to get a bit of a workout because my question is also directed to the Green Party. As I mentioned earlier when I was giving my introduction, I'm a graduate student at the University of Calgary Political Science Department. And one of the interesting things about being a poli-sci student at the U of C is that there are many, many conservatives at the U of C poli-sci department. Provincially, federally, I mean, Tom Flanagan's on faculty there, Ted Morton is on faculty there, which means that there's a lot of students who like to talk about conservative politics at the U of C political science department. And while Ralph Klein has endorsed Stephen Harper as one conservative to another, not all Alberta Tories have endorsed Stephen Harper. And considering that there is a potential provincial leadership race going on, there are several leadership races going on within the Alberta Tories. Now, the Tories that don't have any use for Stephen Harper are voting Green, and they're telling us that they're voting Green. This includes many people working on Jim Dinning's campaign, and Jim Dinning is considered to be the front runner for the provincial leadership campaign for the Alberta Tories. I think this makes an interesting statement about the Green Party of Canada. It's interesting because the Sierra Club just rated the Green Party platform as 97% out of 100. The NDP was 91. And the Green Party had to bring themselves up, essentially, to the New Democrats level from their 2004 election campaign. Ms. Sheridan, you yourself have only talked about tax cuts in the portions that you wrote for the election coverage for the Lethbridge Herald. There wasn't anything on the environment in the questions that you were able to write direct answers to. Jim Harris is a former member of the Progressive Conservative Party, and by all rights, once you examine the current Green Party of Canada, you really could be called the Blue Greens rather than just the Greens. Given that the NDP is longstanding the party of social and environmental justice, why should someone who is progressive and is seeking social and environmental justice vote Green?
Why should someone who is social and environmental justice? Well, that I would think that's what we're based on, is social and environmental justice. Socially, we are definitely for equality of people, equality of genders and races. We want all people. Poverty. We don't want anybody to be living in poverty. There's no excuse for anybody in this country going hungry. All people have a right to be heard and a right to be listened to. If I'm understanding socially correctly, there, social justice and whatnot. Environmentally, was your next question? Sorry. Environmentally, we intend to be very tough and very strict on the environment. Any polluters will be taxed. They will be made to clean up their mess. We are cutting all subsidies to the gas and oil industry. We are cutting all subsidies to any nuclear plants. We are banning all mining of uranium. Mining companies will be cleaning up their mess. There will be no more subsidies to mining companies. We are going to penalize polluters and people that are environmentally unfriendly, and we are going to make this neutral, what they call neutral tax base or something, because we are going to pass on the savings and cut taxes in many other green-friendly ways. There will be no taxes on school books. There will be no taxes on transportation. There will be no taxes on education, anything that is environmentally friendly, socially smart, common-sense thing to do that makes our society a better place. We are going to reward you for behaving that way. We will tax junk food. We will not tax anything that is not junk food. That type of philosophy is what we are going to be doing.
I can't help but think, though, if the Greens were really serious about the environment, then you would be front-loading that in the presentations that you'd be making. And again,
in the Herald, it was all about taxes. Here, your question was all about taxes. And only when pushed on the environment do you bring up the environmental platform. So, I mean, the NDP has it front and center, and we were rated the best in 2004 for our environmental platform, and we're rated essentially the same as you this time around. So, I mean,
you're really bitter about that. I did not do that. The Sahara Club did that. Okay, we have a platform on e-energy on our bulletin, on our website. We have a whole big paper on Kyoto, which I've studied and I've tagged and whatever, you know, but it's very difficult being up here and trying to find the things you tag. You can't find where you want to go. We are definitely a green part. We are definitely an environmental part. There's no doubt about it. We have some extremely smart ideas for the environment. It's just that, you know, it's not all we do. We have a full platform now, and it just makes so much common sense to me about the environment. And have I talked about the environment? Do people feel me talking about the environment? I don't know.
Mark, and feel free to use your 5 minutes as you see fit.
I guess I'm supposed to stand first. I would like to ask each of the candidates to answer the same question, maybe 30 seconds apiece to keep it equitable. Recently, the Supreme Court of Canada passed down a ruling legalizing swingers clubs. Now, this was somewhat reported in the national media. None of the national parties' campaigns have mentioned this because they know what a time bomb it is. The Christian Heritage Party is not afraid to tackle these issues because we know we stand for real Canadians. Now, Canada has the lowest age of sexual consent of any country in the Western world, 14. This has made Canada a center for sexual predators, for sexual tourism, and now the Supreme Court has passed down a ruling that says that consenting adults, 14 and up, by Canada's rules, may engage in whatever partner swapping and whatever perverse inclinations they may wish to. More, the Supreme Court didn't just say this, they didn't say that you couldn't rule against these things, they just took it out of the hands of ordinary Canadians. The previous legal test was the community standards. The Supreme Court now has passed, or said that the test should instead be for what causes harm. Harm is undefined. That means it's going to be legislated. What they've basically said is the citizens of Canada are not capable of understanding what the law should be. It should be left in the hands of appointed, unelected, unaccountable judges, and I would like to know what each of the candidates and their parties plans to do to reduce this type of judicial activism.
I'm glad I get to answer this question, because I actually disagree with how you view the Supreme Court of Canada. Now, being a political scientist and a social scientist, I've actually run the statistics about what Canadians think about the court, and Canadians are court files and charter files. They love the court, and they love the charter. I disagree with your analysis of this particular case. The court struck down the law that this club was charged under, and to be frank, when Parliament gives the court bad laws to work with, the court can't do very much in interpreting those laws. So ultimately, if Parliament is truly supreme, then Parliament should look back at itself when decisions come like this and write better laws.